Chapter 25. 7 June 1937. Hugo didn't know how long he'd been sitting at the dining room table with Hannah clinging to his hand. I've never tried to put it into words before. You're the first person I've wanted to tell. He knew the telling of it had charged the atmosphere. He felt tight with tension. "You could have divorced her," Hannah whispered. "Not so easy, then. I mulled it over for a long time. Couldn't make up my mind." "Why not? You'd have been free of her." "It would have meant giving her half the fortune I'd worked so hard to earn. It would have been giving the Schofields what they'd wanted in the first place. They'd set out to trick me, and they'd succeeded." It had eaten into him, but he'd been fool enough to fall for that. "But staying together all those years, it's hard to believe. Divorce was something of a disgrace then. Eunice said she didn't want one. Divorcees were not accepted in society. I was a good meal ticket. That was what she wanted. She'd have had the meal ticket in any case. I do see she had you where she wanted you. She couldn't lose. I've always known when to cut my losses in business. When it's been necessary, I've gritted my teeth and got on with it. Yet on a personal level, I wasn't able to bring myself to divorce her. When I'd cooled sufficiently to see Eunice as she really was, my business was hungry for capital. I couldn't bring myself to spend it on a divorce settlement. As I saw it, Hannah, becoming wealthy was a matter of balancing the greed of wanting more capital with the fear of losing what I already had. I couldn't cut myself off from what I already had. It was a foolish decision. But later on, the more I had, the more I stood to lose. By the time I didn't care about that, Eunice and I were spending more time apart, so I didn't feel so strongly about being free. I had nobody else, you see. When Sir Cecil went bankrupt the following year, she blamed me.
You were trapped in a marriage of hatred.
It was more an empty shell, a neutral relationship. I can't believe now that money meant so much to me. It didn't buy what I wanted most. After a time, I didn't want what it would buy.
Hannah seemed to rouse herself. You have to be very rich to know that. You went your separate ways, but stayed married.
I suppose so. I told Eunice there'd be no divorce. To be fair, once I became successful, and there was more kudos in being my wife, she became a sort of figurehead. When I needed to do any entertaining, she organized it and gave a performance. She always appeared to have my interests at heart, always appeared affectionate. But in private, Hannah had her hand pressed against her mouth. He knew she was trying to imagine how he'd felt about his wife. We haven't much in common. She had the Schofield way with money. I gave her a large allowance and made it clear I wouldn't add to it. The years passed quickly enough.
But you said you wanted more children. You understood about...
At one time, Matt seemed to be holding us together. We tried to have another child. Eunice wanted one badly, so she let me try hard. All fairly cold-blooded by then. Love had died. It's a terrible confession, isn't it, Hannah? The story of my life. Fated as the most successful man in British business, yet a total failure on a personal level. Not any longer, Hugo. I have you now.
He put an arm round her shoulders and pulled her closer.
Everything has suddenly come right for me, too. I have you, and I have the twins and Lizzie. I've never been so utterly content with my lot. Who would have thought it, Hugo? He picked up the bottle and Hannah's glass, put an arm round her waist to draw her to the stairs, felt the comfort of her arm round him. He took her to his bedroom. To undo the buttons on her silk blouse tightened the tension he felt. His heart was racing as he ran his hands over her smooth shoulders. All Hannah's underwear seemed gossamer fine, enhancing her large figure. Though well covered, she was not over-fleshed. Her breasts were generous and her abdomen firm, the way a woman should be once past the first flush of youth. He was carried away, as he always was. The touch of her hands on his bare skin was almost more than he could bear.
Passion came so easily when he was with her. He gave himself up to it, hearing her whispers of love. The pain, when it came, sliced like a knife through his chest. Every gasp for air seemed to push the blade deeper into his flesh. From showering love on Hannah's glorious body, wild with delight, aware only of the softness of her flesh, he was reduced in an instant to helplessness. He felt her body continue to move against his for a moment. She slowed. "Hugo?" The pain cut again. He collapsed on top of her, no longer able to support his own weight on his arms. "Hugo!" He knew he'd knocked the wind out of her, and that she'd never be able to breathe with his weight crushing her like this. He could feel her struggling, trying to pull herself out from under him. She rolled him off, over onto his back. "Hugo, what's happened? Are you all right?" Her frightened face hovered 6 inches above his own, terrible concern showing in her eyes. Yet he couldn't answer, could only gasp in agony and shame. He had felt something like this before. 4 or 5 times over the last month, pain that ripped through his chest, knotting his heart and his hands as well as his stomach. Bad enough to double him up. At the same time, his chest had felt as though it was locked inside a metal cage, which wouldn't expand to let him breathe. A good belch would relieve all the symptoms, so he knew it was indigestion. He'd been liverish for years, but this was worse than anything he'd ever suffered before. It made him cut down on wine and drink more brandy instead. He ate smaller helpings of the wonderful steak and kidney pudding Hannah produced for him. Normally, he wouldn't have dreamt of belching in front of Hannah. It was too obvious a sign of infirmity and old age. But tonight he had to try. The pain had never been so bad. For the first time, the belch wouldn't come, and the pain was getting worse. His mind crawled with fear that it might be something more serious than indigestion, and anger that it had happened now while he was with Hannah. He wanted to breathe deeply, but that made the pain worse too. He became aware of Hannah's naked body scrambling out from under the covers. He heard pure desperation in her sobs as she rushed round the bed to the phone on his side. He heard her voice ask for an ambulance and tried to tell her it wasn't necessary, but he'd be perfectly all right in a few moments. She was throwing her clothes on. As she fastened the last button on her brown silk blouse, she bent over him. "Hugo!" He found he was able to croak. "Lucky it was my bed I'm in," and tried to smile. He knew Hannah was heartened and thought it signalled recovery. She asked, "What about you? Wouldn't it seem more normal if you were wearing something? I'd laugh, Hugo, if I wasn't so worried." She found his pajama trousers and was putting them on for him. He tried to lift himself, but the pain jarred through him again. He knew the ambulance had come. Felt the terrible insecurity of being carried downstairs on a stretcher, staring up at the ornate plaster ceiling in the hall. Blackness came and went. He was hardly aware of what was happening. He knew that Hannah held on to his hand and that she was talking to him. He found it soothing, but didn't know what she said. "Hannah, love," he murmured. He kept drifting away. Hannah shivered as she held on to Hugo's hand, willing him to live. She knew he was drifting in and out of consciousness. They'd put an oxygen mask over his face now. It was hissing softly from the cylinder on the other side of the bed. "Will he be all right?" she demanded of the doctor. He'd shaken his head doubtfully.
"Hard to say. Too soon. He's not a young man."
"He's got to be all right," she'd burst out.
"His heart... Has this happened to him before? Did he have any warning?"
"No," she was vehement, "absolutely not. He's been very well these last few months. Said he'd never felt better." The doctor was shaking his head.
"We'll do our best."
A nurse came and went every 15 minutes, taking his pulse. He stirred uneasily on the bed, and she knew he was on the edge of consciousness. "Hugo," she whispered, "darling, get better. You know how much I need you. You've made me so happy these last few months. I couldn't bear it if you left me now. You've everything to live for." She stared at him, but his eyes were closed. He gave no sign that he heard her. tears were stinging her own eyes. She couldn't believe what was happening.
"I do love you, Hugo. You must get better."
His hand was growing colder. She felt as though ice crystals were forming in her own body. She was stiff and tense and utterly terrified for him. The nurse was inside the screens again, bending over Hugo, writing on his charts. Something in her manner made Hannah feel colder still. She knew his life was ebbing away when the nurse returned with the doctor. He turned off the oxygen. Hugo's face looked waxen, and he breathed stertorously now. She sat without moving for another hour while his noisy breathing grew slower. She kept telling him over and over how much she loved him. He didn't speak to her again. Lizzie woke with a start, aware of a throbbing engine outside on the drive. For a moment she couldn't think where she was. The bedroom, clearly lit with serene moonlight, was unfamiliar. The silver clock on her bedside table told her it was 2:30. Outside, a car door slammed. Anxiety niggled in the pit of her stomach. Normally, if she was woken in the night, it was by the twins in the adjoining room. She slid out of bed and went to the door. They were still small mounds in their cots, and she could hear their even breathing. She came back to her own open window. It was a soft summer night. Below was the roof of a taxi, and Hannah was paying it off. She'd said she'd be home before midnight. Lizzie's first thought was that she'd had a better time than expected. But Hannah looked crushed. The tires crunched as the taxi drove round the circular flower bed and out into the road. Hannah made no move to come in, but stood staring after it. Had something terrible happened, or had she just forgotten her key? Lizzie was opening her mouth to call down when she heard an unmistakable sob. It sent panic fluttering through her. She grabbed for her dressing gown, a present from Joey, and ran downstairs. The heavy front door creaked as she opened it.
"Hannah, is something the matter?"
Lizzie was shocked when she saw her face, ravished with anguish and running with tears. The jaunty little hat swathed in net, perched over one eye, looked incongruous now. Lizzie ran out to throw her arms round her, to comfort and bring her in.
"Hannah, what's happened?"
The step was icy to her bare feet. She couldn't stand on it. She was hustling Hannah inside.
"It's Hugo. Heart attack. He's dead."
Lizzie felt her heart turn over with shock and regret that she hadn't had time to know him better. But pity for Hannah was stronger. She drew her into the kitchen, opened the dampers on the Arga to make it burn up because Hannah's hands felt frozen, put the kettle on for tea. Under the electric light, Hannah's agony was even more apparent. Her eyes were red and swollen. She slumped onto a chair at the table and seemed unable to tell Lizzie exactly what had happened. She mumbled and corrected herself and gave two conflicting accounts. Lizzie thought her hardly coherent and put an arm across her shoulders to comfort her. It brought further torrents of tears. After some hot tea, she said,
"I've got to pull myself together."
"Go to bed, Hannah. You'll be better in the morning."
"No."
She seemed agitated.
"I've got to tell people. Greg and Eunice. And then there's Matt. And Dorothy. She ought to know. She was fond of her grandfather."
Lizzie poured her a second cup, but Hannah blew her nose and said she was going to the bathroom to wash her face. She was away long enough for Lizzie to feel worried. She even went upstairs to make sure Hannah was all right.
"I'm just coming, Lizzie,"
Hannah said in answer to her call, and seemed more in control of herself when she came out. She went to the phone in the hall and gave Eunice's number to the operator. Lizzie hovered, wanting to show support. It rang for a long time before it was picked up.
"Very bad news, Eunice. So sorry to tell you. I'm afraid it's Hugo."
Lizzie heard Eunice's voice on the line, querulous at being woken.
"We'd been to the Royal Court in Liverpool. We'd gone back to Wince and were having a late supper when he had this terrible pain. So bad he went straight up to bed. He asked me to bring him some brandy. I waited a little while to see if he wanted anything else,
but when I went up he seemed worse, so I rang for an ambulance. Yes, he died in Platterbridge Hospital shortly after getting there."
Lizzie stood open-mouthed. Hannah's account of what had happened was clear and concise now. She'd been so shocked and grief-stricken, and had gone to such lengths to pull herself together, Lizzie was suspicious. Was that really the whole story? She was too tired to think properly. She told herself she was being silly. Hannah was trying to find out if she could reach Matt by telephone in Crete, and getting into a panic because she was making no progress. "A telegram?" Lizzie suggested. In the end, she had to send one. Hannah was white with exhaustion.
"I don't know what to do about Dorothy."
"It'll be soon enough in the morning."
"Won't be any easier. None of us knows her address. Oh, and I've forgotten Greg."
That done, Hannah stood up. She seemed suddenly much older.
"I keep thinking I'll wake up and find it's all a bad dream."
At her bedroom door, she paused to pat Lizzie's hand.
"Glad you were here, Lizzie. You've been a help."
Lizzie was afraid that wasn't the truth either. She'd not been able to comfort her. Hannah's loss was too great for that. In the days that followed, Eunice returned to Wins to organize a big funeral, with all the pomp and ceremony that befitted a man of Hugo's status. The papers were filled with accounts of his death. They recalled his past exploits, listed his gifts to charity, and assessed his probable wealth to several wildly different levels. Lizzie looked ahead across the bleak days to the funeral, wanting it over. Nothing could seem normal while that hung over them. Hannah spent most of her time nursing one or other of the twins, finding some comfort in them. She was past crying now, but locked in misery, as though she had nothing more to live for. She hardly left the house for fear of being photographed. A date was discussed for the funeral, but when they heard from Matt it was delayed another 2 days to allow him to get home. Lizzie was worried because she was installed in his house and was afraid he wouldn't like it. Eunice sent her car to meet him at Speke Aerodrome. As it happened, Lizzie opened the door to him at Oak Ridge while the chauffeur was unloading his suitcases onto the step. Matthew Mortimer, her grandfather, was not at all as she'd imagined. He was not a younger edition of Hugo. If anything, he seemed older. His skin was lined and dry, sunburned to a dark mahogany shade.
"Mr. Mortimer," she said as he came up the steps, "I'm Lizzie."
"Good evening," he said. "Bring my suitcases upstairs, will you?"
Hannah was behind her in the hall. Matt pecked her cheek mechanically.
"No, no, Matt. Lizzie isn't the maid. She's Dorothy's. I wrote and told you."
"Oh."
He turned to survey her then, with a cool, unwelcoming stare.
"I suppose it doesn't matter now. What a mess everything's in."
Hannah stood looking nonplussed, then reverted to domestic matters.
"Have you had dinner?"
"Yes," Matt said, "but I'd like a cup of tea."
"I'll make it,"
Lizzie offered, eager to get away from him. She dragged his suitcases in off the step, but left them just inside the front door. The next morning, Lizzie went down to breakfast in her dressing gown. She was dreading the funeral and could hardly eat. She'd never been to one before and had no idea what to expect. Matt didn't have much to say. He opened a newspaper and read. Hannah didn't appear at all. Lizzie went back to her room and dressed herself in her new black outfit. It didn't suit her, but when she'd gone out to buy it, she'd seen nothing in black that did. The sales assistant had assured her that the pillbox hat, with its glossy black feather, was the latest thing. It seemed to cast a grey shadow on her face, making her look washed out and ill. She was nervous because she knew she'd be meeting other members of the Mortimer family. "If Lady Mortimer seems offhand, don't let it upset you," Hannah warned quietly. "I don't. She's never very kind to me." They gathered in the hall to wait for the car Eunice was sending to fetch them to Wynn's Hall. It was a grey, overcast morning, and the light coming through the stained-glass windows seemed washed out, too. Lizzie thought they all looked as ill at ease as she felt. Matt, looking drawn and old, had brought his newspaper to read.
He sat near the empty fireplace. Greg had driven over to join them. He strode restlessly backwards and forwards, his yellow hair seeming brighter against his somber suit and black tie. He stopped in front of his father's chair and asked, "How much do you reckon he'll leave?" Hannah sat quietly resigned, with her hands in her lap, her black gloves already on. They were all silent on the journey, and arrived to find the funeral cortege already assembling on the drive. A long row of cars, all large, all highly polished, all black. Lizzie followed the family inside. She was sure her heart was thumping loud enough to be heard. This wasn't how she'd imagined herself meeting her great-grandmother, standing in a line of people waiting to offer their condolences. Eunice reminded Lizzie of pictures of Queen Victoria, plump and short, seeming to be draped entirely in black crepe, and wearing a big black hat with the veil thrown back from her face. Lizzie watched Matthew hug her and whisper his sympathy. She couldn't believe he was her grandfather. She felt nothing for him. The old lady offered a plump, lined cheek to be kissed by each of her family in turn. She had several chins, and her flesh fell in deep, mournful folds. Then Hannah was drawing Lizzie forward. "Eunice, this is Elizabeth, Dorothy's eldest daughter, a great-granddaughter you haven't met before." The large black hat was inclined in her direction for a moment. No cheek was offered for a kiss, not even a hand to be shaken. Eunice was already turning to greet people who had followed them in, giving no sign that she understood who Lizzie was.
"I'm going upstairs to see Father. Pay my last respects," Matt said. "Are you coming?"
"No, thank you." Hannah's voice was strangled. Lizzie clung to her, afraid she'd be asked to go too. Matt gave them a rather pitying look and strode off with Greg. Lizzie felt spurned and out of place, waiting in this grand room with so many people dressed in black. She thought the men looked like penguins and the women like crows. She knew nobody but Hannah and was careful to stay close to her. Nobody came to speak to her, but very few spoke to Hannah either. Lizzie looked up at the 40 feet of Eunice's drawing room that still managed to look over full of furniture and knick-knacks. Everywhere she turned there was something to take the eye. Pictures, cut glass, silver, fine china, and family photographs. It reminded her of a museum, but today she couldn't concentrate on such things. They were near a window overlooking the front entrance. Cars were continuing to arrive. A woman alighted from a taxi and started to climb the front steps. Beside her, Lizzie was aware of Hannah straightening up and feeling for her hand. Lizzie's heart was pounding harder than ever. She guessed even before Hannah whispered, "This is your mother." People were turning to look at the woman who was now in the doorway. Lizzie felt a stirring of interest round the room. Hannah was easing her closer. Her mother was dressed from head to toe in black, and a black veil billowed round her face, but behind it the blue eyes were defiant. She flounced up to Eunice and kissed her cheek in greeting. Eunice turned her back on her in deliberate insult.
"Grandpa would want me to come," said Dorothy coolly, and a ripple seemed to go round the room. "I'll go upstairs to see him and make my farewells."
"Dorothy," Hannah touched her arm as she made to pass, "how are you?"
"I'm fine, thank you, Hannah."
She put so much conviction into her voice, Lizzie couldn't doubt it.
"How are my children?"
"Here's one of them you haven't seen for a long time." Hannah was pulling her forward. "Elizabeth. We call her Lizzie."
"Hello."
Lizzie's mouth was dry. She felt stiff with tension. Should she call her mother? How many countless times had she imagined this meeting? Her mother would be twice as excited to see her as Hannah had been. She'd say she'd missed her, and that she loved her. Lizzie put out her hand, hardly knowing what she was doing. Two black-gloved hands flew to the veiled face in shocked surprise. In an instant Dorothy had turned to weave through the people towards the door, but not before Lizzie had seen her brilliant blue eyes glaze with tears. Hannah was squeezing her hand. "She's upset. We took her too much by surprise." Lizzie tried to rid herself of the lump in her throat. She wouldn't have recognized her own mother. She was nothing to her, a complete stranger. She doesn't want to know me now. She's in a turmoil, overcome by emotion, Hannah whispered. Look, here's someone else you'll want to meet. In the same boat as yourself, her other daughters, Henrietta and Cecilia, Honor and Patience, and their father, Franklin Flower. Lizzie was blinking furiously, trying to hold back the tears that threatened. Half-sisters. She tried to imagine what they'd be like. They were tearful, too.
I don't know why Dorothy had to come. Franklin was agitated, half-whispering. She must have known we'd be here. She must know that seeing her would upset the girls.
Lizzie kissed each of the four girls in turn. They, too, seemed strangers. She was much closer to the O'Malley children. She knew she was expected to feel pity for them, but seeing them against this background, it was hard. "At least you still have a father to look after you," she said, and was immediately sorry. It made her sound heartless and unfeeling. She was still on tenterhooks as she watched six stalwart pallbearers tackling the bend in the stairs. The coffin of polished oak with handsome brass handles turned the corner and came smoothly down to be loaded into the hearse. She couldn't bear to think of Hugo inside it. Outside the village church, wreaths and flowers lined the walls for 50 yards. Lilies and gladioli behind cellophane. Lizzie felt worse. Inside, the church was full to overflowing with mourners. A bishop had come from Chester to assist the vicar. He extolled Hugo's fine character and generosity at length. The music swelled mournfully, making the tears harder to control. Voices were raised, but many missed the first notes of Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me. Hannah wept openly, with no veil to hide behind. Matt blew his nose hard as they went out into the cool morning air. It wasn't over yet. Lizzie knew she'd have to get back into the car and go back to Wynn's Hall. It wasn't quite so bad this time. There was sherry that burned her already dry tongue. She craved water instead, but couldn't bring herself to ask for it. There was food she couldn't touch, though it engrossed most of the others. Franklin Flower and the girls were becoming less tongue-tied now. A nanny took the two younger ones away. The older ones were asking about Lizzie's life at Yarrow. She hardly knew how to answer them. It seemed impossible not to give them further reason to turn against their mother. Dorothy was here, moving amongst the mourners, veil thrown back now. Lizzie could see the resemblance that stamped their mother and daughter, and that was painful too. She felt haunted by her. She wanted this gathering to disperse so she could go home. She heard someone say to Hannah, "Sir Hugo left this for you." He pushed an envelope into her hand. She saw Hannah freeze. The color drained from her face, and she slid it quickly into her handbag without a second glance.
"I shall read the will in the library in 15 minutes. He asked me not to give it to you then in front of the family."
He went round spreading his message. Heads were nodding, whispers going round the room. "This is why Dorothy's come, of course. She wants to hear the will." Lizzie's spirit sank further. She was afraid she'd be left alone to face the polite conversation of strangers. But Hannah had recovered. Her hand was on Lizzie's arm, steering her towards the library. "All the family," she said. "Mr. Wilcox, the family solicitor, mentioned you specially." Lizzie felt bewildered by it all. She was in another vast room with bookcases all along one wall. She perched uncomfortably beside Hannah on a Victorian horsehair sofa. They were all streaming in. Matt and Greg, Dorothy and her estranged husband, Franklin Flower, and the girls, to sit about the room. She felt uncomfortably hot as she waited again. It seemed to be a day for waiting about. Never had one passed so slowly. Eunice, her great-grandmother, sat with the solicitor at a polished round table. She patted her dry eyes with a black-bordered handkerchief. At last, Mr. Wilcox opened a folder and began. Lizzie was aware that the tension in the room was heightening. He read out a long preamble. Lizzie only half listened. It seemed to be telling them that Hugo Mortimer did not believe in inherited wealth,
and that he had already made provision for some members of his family. They were all sitting up straighter in their seats as the solicitor came to the part they wanted to hear.
"For my wife Eunice, the use of our home, Ince Hall, with all fittings and fixtures, pictures, furniture, and motor cars. Also the remainder of the lease at Albany, and all furnishings there for her lifetime." Lizzie was aware of the shock waves this was causing. "I have already made adequate provision for upkeep of these properties, and a sufficient income from—" They all heard the strangled grunt Eunice gave, but the solicitor read on, quoting trusts set up many years earlier. "On her death, the above properties and trusts to be handed on for the use of my only son, Matthew Charles Mortimer, for his lifetime, and hence to my grandson Gregory John Mortimer, and hence to his issue. Also to my only son, Matthew Charles Mortimer, my personal effects, wristwatches, fountain pens, signet rings, cufflinks, and such of my books as he might wish to take. For my grandson, Gregory John Mortimer, my harp hunter, which he admired so much in his childhood, and such of my books as he might wish to take." The man looked up and paused. Lizzie could feel the bitter disappointment in those around her that Hugo had apparently meant all he'd said in the preamble. Greg seemed to be in a state of shock.
"To Hannah Mary Mortimer, my daughter-in-law, for whom I have not yet made any provision."
Lizzie felt Hannah stiffen beside her.
"The sum of £250,000.
Her soft gasp of surprise was almost drowned by Eunice's snort of disgust. Dorothy's face was stiff with tension and paper white.
"For Elizabeth Mercy Mortimer, also known as O'Malley."
Lizzie felt herself break out in a sweat. It had not occurred to her that Hugo would leave her anything.
"For whom as yet I have made no provision, the sum of £100,000, to be held in trust until she reaches the age of 21. The income from such to be available to her immediately."
She covered her face with her hands. She couldn't even envisage such a sum, and certainly not what she might expect from it in income. She was only just in time to hear that Hannah had been appointed as one of her trustees. She was shaking with shock. She was rich, rich beyond anything she'd ever imagined. Her life would be different, changed completely at one stroke. Still, the solicitor's voice droned on. Each of her half-sisters was to receive 50,000, the twins, Piers and Paul, 100,000 each. Then followed a few small bequests to Hugo's butler, housekeeper, chauffeur, and head gardener.
"The residue of my monies to go to the following charities."
The solicitor started to read out what seemed to be a long list.
"What about me?"
a sharp voice interrupted. It was Dorothy, her face now ash-white and working with fury. Lizzie was quaking. Those who had expected to receive money had not. Greg's bright blue eyes were staring at her in total affront. Hannah's hand was squeezing hers. She too must feel their envy and their hatred.
"I'm afraid, Mrs. Flower, you are not a beneficiary under this will."
"When was it made?" Eunice demanded, her face white and pinched.
"It's a new will," the solicitor said. "I received instructions to draw it up just over a month ago."
"Grandpa told me," Dorothy wailed.
"I understood I might expect—"
Greg was protesting, his chin sagging with disappointment.
"As I understand it, Sir Hugo felt he'd already made adequate provision for you both. As is usually the case, his earlier wills are made null and void by this one."
He stood up to go.
"If there's nothing else—"
"Wait a minute. All those charities."
Greg's face was thunderstruck.
"What a waste. What a terrible waste. We'll contest it."
"On what grounds?"
"We are close relatives, family, and he hasn't made adequate provision for our needs."
"Those grounds might be reasonable for children who are still minors, or for elderly dependent relatives, but forgive me, neither you nor Mrs. Flower fall into those categories."
Lizzie felt Greg's eyes burn into hers.
"You come worming your way into Hannah's household, worming your way into Hugo's affections. He felt sorry for you. I suppose you asked him for money?"
"No."
Lizzie was almost weeping again.
"No, I didn't expect—I didn't know."
No doubt you're crowing now. You've got what you want. You've done me and Dorothy down.
Nonsense, Hannah said briskly. Hugo had a perfect right to leave his money to whomever he wished. Dorothy, I would have thought you'd be pleased he's remembered Lizzie. He told me he felt he had to make himself responsible for her welfare, because you were not doing so.
But why give her 100,000? My other daughters have been left only 50,000. I don't understand it.
Franklin Flower grimaced.
I asked Hugo not to leave my daughters anything more. I told him I preferred to provide for their needs myself. The twins and Elizabeth have a greater need. They can't expect money from any other source.
I've never been so humiliated in my life.
Dorothy's voice was a cry from the heart.
I thought Grandpa loved me. I thought you did.
Dorothy, you've abandoned your husband and children.
Eunice was at her most self-righteous.
Such things are inexcusable. You've let us all down, disgraced the Mortimer name. You don't deserve more money. You'd only spend it on keeping your fancy men.
And you, what have you done to deserve a quarter of a million?
Eunice had switched her gaze to Hannah, her face full of malevolence. I've always known you were up to no good. Dorothy hadn't finished.
You aren't going to starve Grandma, but he hasn't left you anything extra. What have you done to deserve that? It must have been something very bad, too.
Lizzie was horror-struck as she realized the Mortimers could be as bitterly quarrelsome as the O'Malleys. She could see that what little color Eunice had was draining from her face. The next moment she'd slumped over in her chair.
"She's fainted," Hannah said weakly, and had them all seeking the smelling salts Eunice kept in her handbag.
She'd come round by the time Lizzie found them, and Hannah put her to lie on the horsehair sofa.
"Come on, Lizzie," Hannah said with dignity. "We'll go home."